You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
You know the films, they're the ones that stick with you. Now, you're not allowed to say Bad Boy Buffy, because it doesn't matter what question we ask. People nominate Bad Boy Buffy because it's obviously seared its way into people's consciousness. We'll get to 12 Years a Slave and Utopia in a moment. Josh Nelson's with me. His blog is filmology.com. That's with a PH. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Now, I heard lots of reviews when 12 Years a Slave came out in the States, and they all spoke about its extreme and explicit violence in its depiction of slavery. Is it tough to watch?
I saw this film. I had a really interesting experience seeing this film. I saw this film probably about 2.5 months ago, and it was in New York in a cinema by myself.
Oh, I remember you telling me about this.
And it was quite strange because I was quite conscious of being the only person in the cinema and feeling quite moved at various points in the film and thinking, well, there's no one here to tell me to stop sobbing, so that's fine. But it was a film where I was actually more invested in the narrative as I went along, and it was after the film finished. As soon as those closing credits start rolling, that's when I fell to pieces. And I think it's a strange film. I've only had that experience probably two or three times where it's the gut punch after effect, and then that just stays with you for a couple of hours. From memory, there's really only one scene which stands out as being graphic in its violence, but not sensational. I think the interesting kind of contrast between the way in which Steve McQueen handles violence in this film to, say, and the obvious example is Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, which is so sensational, so over the top. I think he handles violence in a really deft way because it is just this one key scene, and it's really entrenched in a turning point for the two of the key slave characters in the film. So I think maybe people's reaction to this film is not so much rooted in the graphic nature of the violence, but in that emotional punch, because it is, for me, it was a really draining emotional experience, but an incredibly worthy one as well. Like, I don't want to put people off by saying it was emotionally devastating, because I think it's a beautiful film as well, and it's a film with an incredible amount of integrity.
Two simple questions, one hard, one easy. Basic setup, if for people who haven't heard about the freed slave who's made a slave, and also, can you pronounce the lead actor's name?
Yeah, I knew you would ask that. Here we go. Pronunciation time. Friday afternoon.
Yep.
So, okay, it's the narrative or the title is pretty self-explanatory. You have a character. It's based on a memoir published in 1853 about Solomon Northup.
Was it big at the time? I'm assuming the memoir was big at the time.
I actually admit I hadn't heard of it previous, sure. But apparently Steve McQueen, the director, was familiar with it. The lead actor who's garnering all the awards, I think it's Chiwetel Ejiofor.
He's actually been in quite a few films. 12 Years a Slave, the trailer.
Kidnapped. Sold into slavery.
Well, boy, how you feel now?
My name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man.
And you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're no free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway.
Josh Nelson is with me. We do want to hear about the films that moved you so much. Anne in Doncaster says, Blindside had myself and my 11-year-old daughter in tears. And someone else nominating Steve McQueen's Hunger, which is the Fassbender's first big one.
It is Bobby Sands, the IRA imprisonment. Incredible film.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, look, Steve McQueen is three for three. I think they're three incredible films. Look, maybe coming back to some of the things that I thought 12 Years a Slave did. We just sort of mentioned that the cast is predominantly non-American, and I think the approach that he's taken with this film really distinguishes it from, well, last year's crop of Oscar films, such as Django Unchained, which is obviously slavery as action cinema, but also Lincoln, which is really schmaltzy, sentimental Spielberg.
Which I liked. It was good.
Yeah, I had some problems with aspects of Lincoln. I think there's elements of Spielberg's strong direction in there as well, but it was very much a narrative about the heroic white person saving the African-Americans.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It's a sentimental narrative. And most of the slavery narratives that we've had, particularly in cinema, have been down that track. There's not a great sense of sentimentalism in here. It's not. I don't think McQueen's interested in rewriting history or creating kind of savior figures.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a kind of a memoir biopic. But what I really loved about it, because I don't tend to gravitate towards biopics all that much, is while it is episodic, it has a really strong sense of narrative and a strong sense of it's the thematic preoccupation, and that is this idea of freedom as something that can be completely stripped at a moment's notice, and what is the value of freedom. And rather than just playing off stereotypes like the typical evil white ranch slave owner, which we have the kind of embodied by people like Fassbender's character, there's all these levels and intricacies and dynamics there that we don't typically get, even within the slaves, within those kind of the
so
plantation.
It feels real.
It does, and it feels honest. And the cast, we mentioned some of them. The other ones, Brad Pitt's in there with a cameo, Paul Dano, Benedict Cumberbatch, Paul Giamatti.
Gee, everyone's in there.
The only actor actually that stood
Omar's
out.
Omar's in it, isn't he? From The Wire, Michael K. Williams.
Oh, possibly. Brad Pitt, I think, it was the only one that stood out a bit as being Brad Pitt.
Okay.
Whereas the rest of the actors are such great character actors that they sort of melded into the plot more.
Sure.
But yeah, the way in which it explores the idea of freedom, and it's such an engaging story, even though it is episodic in nature, and it's a remarkable performance across the board. And again, Fassbender he just disappears into the role in getting to some pretty nasty sort of territory as well. There's just something about Steve McQueen that I find utterly fascinating as a director. Hunger was such a radical break from traditional cinema. I mean, the middle section of the film is a single shot with a discussion between Michael Fassbender and Liam Cunningham, who's a priest in the jail.
It goes on for 38 minutes or something.
And they just
it?
Had to keep the camera rolling. And it's an amazing centerpiece. And it's so unnatural in terms of contemporary cinema. Because he comes from a visual arts, like art installation background, more so than your typical film school. And Shame, again, was a very different type of film, the sex addiction film that we talked about a couple of years ago. It's a breath of fresh air. In terms of the Oscar nomination, and this is why we're covering it now, because it's being released a time in with that, this is the film that my kind of heart lies in. I don't know if it'll win it. You know, Oscar, Best Picture Oscars tend to be done by the kind of middle-of-the-road films.
Gravity's also up for Best Oscar.
There's 10 films. And look, I have a feeling, like Argo last year, that it'll go to some middle-of-the-road kind of crowd-pleasing venture, which doesn't sort of tip the scales or challenge the system.
MRI? Pretty good.
Well, it is. It's visually stunning and technical. Yes. It's clearly going to sweep all the technical awards, sure. I would think. Is it an Oscar bait type of narrative? Man, maybe not so much. I'm not sure. Maybe Dallas Buyers Club, depending on where the politics this year sits, will probably determine which way the Academy will vote.
Well, Josh and I are always willing to talk about Matthew McConaughey. I'm going to get a quick... I'm going to get an update on Dallas Buyers Club, only because I have no idea what it's about other than Matthew McConaughey, very thin, is in it. Just let me go to your text, though. Robin Essendon's keen for me to read this out. He sent it twice. Ralph, Mississippi Burning made me so angry. The treatment of black Americans, the KKK, and the non-cooperation towards the FBI, with exclamation marks. Simon in Officer. Borat. I've never been in a cinema where everyone laughs so much that you couldn't hear the movie. That's from Simon in Officer. Greg from Ballarat. Cape Fear freaked me out. Oh, Greg, I am so with you. I just found that so disturbing to watch. I really did enjoy it. Kids, I never watched. Another that I avoided, actually, because it looked too much. And someone's actually having a go at me, I think. If you can't handle the odd emotionally devastating movie, stick to PG movies and avoid interesting dinner conversations. Let me tell you, my friend, I sat through Schindler's List twice with people who were related to those in the film. So don't worry. I've done my fair share of emotionally devastating movies. It's just not always what I want to do on my Friday nights. Look, 1300 222 774. I'd love to hear from you about the movies that moved you the most. Don't have to be sad. Could be funny. Could be just, you know, the one that just left you on the most ecstatic high. And just before we move on from this film, I want to mention that the lead actor, I'm going to have a go at his name, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, that'll do.
Gosh, I remember this now. He was also in 2012, the really bad film. Yeah, I knew he'd done a really poor film. But he was also really good in Children of Men with Clive Owen.
Fantastic film.
You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
A bunch of guys sitting around reading poetry.
No. Ding. Thank you for playing anyway.
What was the Dead Poets Society?
The Dead Poets were dedicated to sucking the marrow out of life. Spirits soared, women swooned, and gods were created. Not a bad way to spend an evening, eh?
Dead Poets Society, of course. Go on. When you saw that when you were a teenager, that moved you. I know it did. 1300 222 774. Your Schindler's List just made me weep and weep. And, Josh, when I saw Blue Velvet as a 13-year-old, I think I've mentioned this on air before, I've never recovered. The mental scars remain. I've just never looked at a breathing mask in quite the same way again.
Oh, no.
No, it's horrible. Look, 12 Years a Slave is on. That's a pretty wide release, isn't it? Actually?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's probably not such the multiplex film,
no,
but most of those outer, yeah.
Sure. You won't struggle to see it. So let me know the movies that moved you the most. Laughter, tears, anger, happiness, ecstasy, anything. The one that brought out the most emotional 1-2 punch. The text, of course, is 0437-774-774. Utopia. Now, John Fain had a chat to John Pilger about Utopia, the film. It's Pilger's latest excoriation of Australia. Have a listen to the trailer.
If they're part of our society too, they have to do the same as us.
I was waiting for a description. The concentration camp is here. The Sorek rottenness, play and stay.
We rounded people up into our own concentration camps.
No more whispering in our minds.
Welfare men found us and took us, no, and mothers were screaming and crying and hanging onto the truck when they drove us away.
We've got a lot of racist policies in our past, but this one was the mother of them all.
That's the trailer from Utopia, John Pilger's... what number film is that, Josh? Do you know? He's done a few, hasn't he?
He certainly has.
He's not Woody Allen prolific, but still. What's it like?
Well, this is the type of film that presents a bit of a dilemma for, I think, film critics, because it's a film where maybe at a certain point you have to distinguish between the film's intentions, the film's cultural value, and then on a kind of really base level in terms of its structure, its presentation, its focus or lack of focus. And most of the criticisms that I have of this film, I think, are quite easily defendable on the basis of the first part of that, on the basis of its cultural importance, its attempt to kind
of... Is it culturally important? Does he say something new?
I think it's a bit of a wake-up call.
Right.
You know, I think it's interesting that the context that this has come up for me personally, and I think culturally, given the shift in government and the way in which Indigenous affairs is still quite prominent in the news. I've been teaching Mabo, is the Year 12 text at the moment, the Rachel Perkins film. And the number of students who've never really heard of the 67 referendum or the Preservation and Protection Acts, this is kind of like a hidden history for Australia, despite what some politicians might say, and the necessity to change history and its focus. We won't get onto that too much now. So I think it is a wake up call. It's a deliberate provocation as well. I mean, that's Pilger's style. That's his kind of bag. The film opens with an interview with Lane Hancock, a very famous interview where he talks about the need to sterilize the Indigenous population. So from the very get go, you know where this film's being aimed. It is a kind of call to arms. I think where you could criticize this film, and where I think, you know, maybe it could have been stronger, is it's really broad in its focus and it's shifting in its focus. It looks at issues from the loss of history, or the shift from areas like Rottnest Island, as you heard there, or Palm Beach, that were the sites of massacres and now the sites of, you know, multi-million-dollar hotels, to the intervention. And he spends a lot of time dealing with the current intervention. There's some very, he's gathered some really intelligent journalists here as well, who are quite articulate. Jeff McMullen is really impressive in this film. And then on the flip side, then he's also dealing with health issues. There's interviews with politicians about what have you changed since I last interviewed. So it refers to his earlier film, sort of in the 80s.
But what's the point? I mean, nobody's going to go and see a John Pilger film unless they agree with him. And the only people who disagree with him are going to go and see it. People are going to write columns in newspapers, I imagine. What's the point? Is it actually culturally significant? I mean, I don't want to go through the chapter and verse of the debate about how we recall the history, but is there a point to a John Pilger film still, if everybody who sees it is already converted?
Well, yes and no. And this is a difficult argument, because do you water down the content of a documentary to broaden its potential audience? But for me, I would say I would be the target audience or demographic for a John Pilger film. I have political sympathies with a lot of what he's trying to do here. And yet there's a lot in this documentary that even shocked me.
Right.
So, you know, particularly from a statistical point of view, one of the statistics drawn from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and I've kind of done a bit of research, and I think he's quite on the money with the way he's used the statistics, that the Aboriginal population per percentage of the population is the most incarcerated people on earth.
Yeah,
that's an horrific statistic. I don't think that's commonly well known.
You mean as a percentage of their of Indigenous numbers? Yeah.
Yep. Where I think... And he falls into the Michael Moore category, and this is where I think the documentary does itself a disservice, is scenes or sequences like turning up to Circular Quay on Australia Day, interviewing drunken bogans who then say, well, it's our land as much as theirs. What's their problem? They should just get off their butts. You know, replaying the myths and the stereotype, which is just an easy get. I mean, it's kind of, it doesn't take too much intelligence or effort to get that sort of response. It's the Michael Moore easy punch. Where I think the documentary works far more effectively is through the breakdown and or through an investigative journalist approach, particularly through issues like The Intervention, through Late Line. And when it's
he has perhaps, a go at some of Late Line sources for their coverage of The Intervention, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Which I hadn't heard about either. So look at
John Fain covered some of that with John Pilger.
So look, I think it is an interesting documentary in its parts. Some of it I didn't find particularly effective. Some of it I think is a really important wake-up call. We don't see too many documentaries about this. One of the interesting points that someone makes in the film is perhaps as Australians and Australian politician and a culture, we're not actually capable now of dealing with this in-house, and maybe we need overseas intervention to come in here, which seems ludicrous, but I think there's a kind of a logic there that actually makes sense.
Ludicrous and impractical.
But
who would do it?
Well, this is a good question, but I think the point that's being made is we can't escape the kind of ideological political bind that we're in. We're too deep. We're too close to it. We're not going to break that. Mm. The so-called rhetoric that has been sort of spouted.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Josh. It's working so well with the Israelis and the Palestinians having outside intervention. That seems to bring them together so well.
Well, something needs to be done. I think that is the overriding point. Something.
Okay, and maybe that's the point of the documentary.
And this is maybe a starting point for further investigation.
Okay, that's Utopia. Where's that on, Josh?
It's only showing at Cinema Nova in Carlton.
Okay. Most Pilger films tend to go to DVD and purchase online as well. So if that's your thing, that won't be too far away, I imagine. Just on films that move you, I'll ask Josh if he was moved by Utopia in a moment, but these texts, Studio Ghibli's Spirited Away. Yes, a magical movie that moved me to tears. Not necessarily of sadness or happiness, just evoked a really strong reaction. Probably something to do with the escapism being over when the film ended. I loved it. That's a beautiful summary of Spirited Away. A beautiful movie like Water for Chocolate, Lisa in Mordialloc. Hi, Raph. Most devastating ever for me was Sophie's Choice, Unbearable Pain. Still can bring tears to my eyes just thinking about it. What, 20 years later? That's from Joan. And Tony, I'm laughing at another text that I'll save for the last. Tony from Brunswick has texted in, Life is Beautiful by Roberto Benigni. Yeah, that moved a lot of people. I kind of struggled with that one. That was, it didn't work for me. And someone texting in, Bad Grandpa, which is rapidly becoming our bad boy bubby for 2014. Every time we mention films, someone texts in about Bad Grandpa. I don't know.
The Oscar-nominated Bad Grandpa.
You're kidding. What's it nominated for?
Best Makeup. I hope it wins just so it can be the Academy Award-winning film, Bad Grandpa. Oh,
okay. What's yours, Josh? The film that moved you the most? There's a few.
Aside from 12 Years a Slave, the two other ones, one we talked about last year, Michael Haneke's Amour, but probably the most devastating, Lars von Trier's Dancer in the Dark.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely kills me, that final moment. And again, it was that I can't speak to anyone. I need some alone time now to deal with this and process this film.
I need to lie down in a dark room so I can bring in some calm breathing. Look, you can check out all of Josh's reviews at filmology.com. That's spelled with the PH. The movies we mentioned, 12 Years a Slave on reasonably, pretty wide release, I'd say, and Utopia, showing only at Cinema Nova. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.